like to make a brief overview of what me and Olaf Schmidt will talk about. So we want to begin with introduction, with what is accessibility, how it relates to TV4. Then Olaf will talk about 5 rules of thumb for the TV developers, how to make your application not introduce any more barriers for accessibility. We will talk about extended car schemes, about the Qt accessibility framework. I will then talk about our need for a better audio framework, which is really a problem that we need to solve in the future. And then we hopefully will make some conclusions. Since most of us here are accessibility people, I hope to make the discussion and the presentation a little more technical, so I hope you will get something out of it. And so I wanted first to emphasize once more what is accessibility, and that accessibility is not just something special, something for the handicapped, which only few people should care about, but it's something that is, of course, it's very important to think of the handicapped, but accessibility is also something that should be taken into account by other developers that don't specialize only on the handicapped. Because, for example, KD developers and GNOME developers often talk about usability, but I think accessibility and usability are very related. And I think, for example, you cannot talk about usability or you don't have any usability in the situations that where you don't have accessibility. So I think it's also how we should talk about what we are doing to other developers and maybe make them aware that, for example, this speech was targeted at them and not to the accessibility developers primarily. I think that almost everyone can benefit from accessibility. Olaf just today morning gave a very good example of how even a special kind of accessibility can help ordinary users. For example, when you are sitting with a laptop in a sunny day outside, I am sure most of you have experienced this situation. It's hard to use the computer. You are running your screen at the maximum height and it's still impossible to read it, well, then you are in the situation you cannot talk about usability because the screen is inaccessible for you. And if you could just easily turn into high contrast mode, which is supposed to be a part of accessibility, then you could easily use the computer. Also, accessibility is only possible if the applications are well designed, and maybe it's even the other way, that if the applications are already good designed, then accessibility comes in very easy. For example, it was quite easy to make accessibility into Emacs and into all its applications because Emacs is very well designed, it's extensible, and so on. And you don't need to do anything special to make LaTeX accessible. You just need an editor, and with LaTeX you can create documents even if you are blind, and you can be quite sure that the result that you print on your screen and you cannot see any longer will be more or less correct, and it will make some sense, and you actually when you read the ethics document, it's everything in text, even the 4.5 marks. So it's easy to see what the document looks like or is to imagine, opposed to, for example, some specific editors. So one of the core things of accessibility, I think, is cooperation and standards. It's because maybe for the communities outside accessibility, they might have more resources, more developers, because they target data communities, so they can temporarily live without, for example, good standards and cooperation, because they have resources to do all kinds of hacks and temporary solutions, but we are so few accessibility developers and we have so few resources that for us cooperation and standards is really something essential, and we should always try, I think, to target them. So I will get the word to Olaf now, and he will tell you about how to make applications that don't create any barriers.
Yeah, I originally intended this part to address application developers, the five rules of thumb that can be used to avoid the most common accessibility pitfalls. Of course, you are all aware of them. I will just go through them much more quickly, and maybe we can discuss later how, what's the best strategy to market this awareness to other people. So the five rules of thumb are: color with care, one size does not fit at all, mouse traps, time is a relative, and let cute handle the sophisticated stuff. Color with care. Most applications follow the KDE color scheme in most parts, but it's also true that a large number of applications use some hard-coded colors somewhere. And this is often a problem because the developer did not think of the case that if you hard-code a foreground color to, for example, red or blue, and the user sets a blue background, then you won't be able to see it. Other problems that can be appear here are color blindness, but people will not be able to distinguish colors. Low vision, where people just might use much more contrast, or for example, a specific dark background for orange, especially if they have light imaging. And so it needs to be ensured that these colors are changeable and are not hard to find. The easiest way to do it is just to use the system color scheme wherever possible. But sometimes applications just need additional colors, and I will discuss later how we could proceed there to make sure that application specific color settings can be avoided wherever possible. Well, this is one example of an aggregator. That's blue text hard coded with a blue background. And as you see, what you can see in that screenshot is that you can't see the text because the color isn't identical. It's completely invisible. A second negative example is Conquer HTTPS mode. It has this nice feature to use a different background for the URL whenever Conquer is run, whenever there is a secure connection. But a light yellow background just doesn't go well with a white text tag. It's getting down to the meat. Then I have an example of Kika, it's a screenshot which shows two or three problems at the same time. One is a toolkit, which is a tooltip, which is hardcore repellers. In this case, it's rather small, so it's not a big problem. So of course, there are cases where the toolkit is very big and it takes a lot of space on the screen, and then it's just a very large light area which can be very, very annoying and treat you partially silent the light. Another thing here, a typical thing here is a small black arrow, which is just hard coded to black, and with a black background you don't see it. And another problem is that the size is fixed. So if you need a larger screen content, because for example, if you have a motion impairment, or because if you're partially sighted, you just need to have everything bigger, then this is a true problem. It's already, if you, as a normally sighted people, it's difficult to access in that area. Okay, so that already leads to the second rule: one size does not fit at all. The things to respect here are quite logical. Don't hardcode the side of user interface elements, don't hardcode positions, use global side settings wherever possible, so we don't have to change them in every application. Offer scroll bars when needed, because if you send a bigger text and icon size, then of course the application often doesn't fit the screen any longer. And test with a high contrast big text theme. Third rule, mouse traps. Some people just can't use the mouse. And so they use keyboard shortcuts. It might be just that someone, if I'm working on my laptop, the touchpad isn't always working so reliably. My mouse, my trackball has batteries in it. They might run out, so the mouse isn't working. And of course, there are motion impaired people who can't use the mouse. Or there might be blind people. Or once we have a bridge for KDE to support it. So, keyboard shortcuts are really important. And also for context menus. It doesn't help if you, for example, some context menus are attached to user elements which are not focusable. So, how do you actually, there is a keyboard shortcut for opening the context menu, but if you can't get the focus of the widget, it doesn't work. Or some applications have a different context menu if you use the keyboard than if you use the mouse or something like that. Tab order, of course. All the toolbar icons cannot be used via the keyboards, so we need to also place this functionality in the menu. And of course the keyboard navigation needs to be documented somehow. Fourth rule is time is relative. Some people are just much slower. Maybe because they're motion impaired, maybe because they're using a screen magnifier or a virtual screen with bigger font sizes and they just only see a small part of the screen. Things like that. So, you need to have thought about it with single click. For example, menus attached to toolbars originally had a hard coded timeout when the menu would be opened and when the click would just be used for a direct action. We changed that to use the double click time, so it's not configurable. The same is true for whether you click or whether you drag, or whether if you show passive pop-ups, there must be a way to get that information in a different way. Because it might just appear in the corner of the screen you can see. Okay. And the fifth rule, that cute handle or the sophisticated stuff, you need to use the queued widgets. If you use standard widgets in the usual way, you need to provide all the information for the widgets. But apart from that, queued can do a lot of useful stuff. Only if you write your own widgets, then you need to care about it and make sure that you also provide them relevant queue accessible. So, extending the color schemes. We already have color schemes in KDE. Did you find that cute? And Qt 4, it's actually possible to, Harvard told me that it's actually possible to add custom defined color rules. Is it true? Okay, who knows? So, this makes it possible to configure all needed colors centrally. Because you know there are just some color which are used in various different applications. We currently have just normal color, text color, button color, color for highlighting text. All of these also with background colors. We have link color and color for visitor links. And Qt also has a color for bright text. Currently, you can't set it in K-Control for some reason. So we will need some more color rules. So I looked at KMail, Conversation, KGPG, etc., and came up with five colors which could be used. One for a port, one color role that signifies a port. Could be also used for new messages in KMail or conversation or aggregator. One is an alternative text color, which could also be used for other messages. One color could be a secure role, which could also be used for trusted in KGPG. So, for example, could be used in Conqueror for HTTPS connections, it could be used for a KMail for digitally signed emails. It could be used in KGPG for signed keys. Then one color to show that something is unsecured or has an unknown trust. And one error color, which could also be used to indicate that the security check is failed. Of course, we would need all of these as for the background colors. Maybe we can go into a discussion here. Do you think that these five color rules are sufficient, or would we need to have some more? And you mentioned one other thing, I forgot that
another thing was, for example, a web page requests inverted colors.
If a web page requests inverted colors, I'm not sure what you mean by that.
I guess the question would be, given that you've defined these five colors, would applications want to invert all five colors? In other words, there would be a regular color and an inverted version of the color. That would...
Gary sent the question to me about whether he would then offer the ability to invert these five colors. But generally inverting colors is a problem because someone with light energy doesn't want to have inverted colors in their color scheme. It will just blind them. Harald mentioned the spell checker thing. Maybe you could just use the arrow code. Okay, so just go on. Another problem are background images. We have in KDE, many important KDE applications have background images by default, and it looks nice. But of course, it's a bit of a hassle for a multi-sided user to change all these background images. Background images generally don't go well with user-defined text colors, so you might end up just being able just to see nothing. A simple solution would be to add an application-specific text color option, as done in Conqua, for example. A much more intelligent solution would be to use an algorithm that converts the image to the chosen background color. Of course, it would have to be a very intelligent algorithm to still have a nice picture. I don't know whether that makes technically sense, but if this is possible, then this would be my idea of choice to have this kind of algorithm in somewhere like KDEX. Has anyone of you ever programmed such an algorithm? Except whether it's a feasible idea? Okay, so I'm just leaving it back there. Okay, a very, very, very bright all of you on the Qt accessibility framework. If you use standard widgets, then you only need to ensure that the what's this text, names, etc. are provided. If you use subclass widgets, then it will also work in those cases. For your own widgets, you need to provide relevant information using Qt accessible classes. And for details, break the Q4 documentation. A brief overview of how the Q accessibility architecture works. For every widget, there is a Q accessible object, which just maps the information of the widget to an API the accessibility branch can interface to. The accessibility bridge is actually a plugin, which means that it can be loaded on demand. And on Unix, it can use the ATSBI protocols. We'll talk to assistive technologies like screen readers, etc. ATSBI is currently based on Corva. We are working on moving that onto DDoS to have a bit more independent solution. But the nice thing about the Qt architecture is that if you are on Windows or on Mac OS, there will also be an accessibility bridge to the relevant APIs. Okay, so the last part of the talk is about the need for an overview. Switch back to Enac.
synthesis is one of our main methods in accessibility of how to communicate and information to blind, partially sighted, or otherwise disabled people. It's very important to have some audio framework or some means of how to deliver the synthesized stream to the user. And actually, in the speech dispatcher and KTTSD projects, we find it's very hard to find some solution for how and where to send audio so that it works well with accessibility. And so at first, one of the conclusions is that speech synthesis actually has quite strict requirements on audio output. What we are asking for is often identified with professional audio and so on. And we found that many of the technologies, for example, don't have a problem with you clicking on the stop button and the sound stopping playing in e.g. 1 second, as is the case with GStreamer, because users of computers often don't have that strict requirements. But actually another thing we found is that some or many of these requirements already exist among users outside the accessibility effort, among ordinary users using simple education, but they are not as crucial for them, they are not as important for them, so that they are not being solved and their priority is low as the rest of the free software community. One example of such a thing is network transparency, because when you think about, e.g., you want to connect to a remote machine and you want to use X, so you now exert this network transparency, so you relay the radio output, and not being able to hear the sounds because the sounds are still playing on ALSA, that remote machine, is not that big obstacle for ordinary users. But you see, it's a bug that the sound is playing on that machine and not on yours, because you want to work on it remotely. But for the blind people, this bug is much more severe, because they cannot use, or the redirection of the video is of no use for them, and the audio is still playing on the distant machine. So, for example, I have found that when talking with the multimedia developers, they often say, why do we want network transparency? It's a very high-level thing, and we actually don't need it. And I found they don't understand why we need it, so it's necessary to explain to them. And this is with other things too. This thing of you pressing the button and the sound stopping to play in 1 second is also a bug, even for ordinary users. And DMX not working properly is also a bug. But normally, for other people, it's not that important. Some of the requirements are quite specific to speech synthesis output. For example, this quick responsiveness. You could say that as an ordinary user, you can live this 1 second. But for us, it's the core point. We cannot live with delays over 40 milliseconds, because otherwise we cannot catch these fast typists. And so when they would press a key, they would actually hear nothing, because 40 milliseconds would be the delay of the audio framework, and in this time they isolate a key, so the whole process of synthesis and sending to other output gets stopped. So the other key is going to be synthesized, but again it gets stopped and you are typing and you hear, you don't hear what you are doing. So I'm going to move to the next slide. Actually, we have already identified the main requirements, and after discussions on the accessibility meeting of SFG on Hawaii, and before that on the Uber Software meeting in France, and after some guided discussions by email, we have created a document that was discussed on Fidesz.org. There's an accessibility manifest on Fidesz.org, and people said that the requirements are enough for them, or nobody complained that he sees something unrealistic or something that doesn't make sense. So we hope we will soon make it official and put it somewhere on the web. I have heard from the film Janina Seka from FSG. She took a little more time to discuss it internally in FSG. So maybe there's even a chance to get it published under FSG or under some other body as the official accessibility requirements on audio teamwork. After having written this document, we went again for a search of technology that would confirm to the document, at least in the main points identified as must-have. And I am quite sure, but I will be happy if I'm really drunk, that no audio framework now meets these requirements, and actually the audio frameworks are far from meeting these requirements, and we need to identify this as an open issue and we need to work on it. It's important because if we don't have proper sound output, then all the things that are built on top of it, of this, can only be as good as the carpet sound output is. They cannot be better. I mean, in how they work, though. So, we had a meeting yesterday with Matthias Kretz from KDEM, and of course, because I'm on a KDE4 conference, and KDE4 is going to use KDEMM. That's the question of if accessibility will use KDEMM. And we found that currently it will be impossible to use KDEMM for as our final solution to this problem with audio servers. Of course, I think it's very good that the KDEMM people are now aware of this problem, and I think, I hope for further cooperation on solving this issue and so on. So, I just want to say that KDEMM is not the final answer and it remains open. We need to ensure that there are no conflicts between KDEMM, speech synthesis, and other multimedia usage. And actually, this is quite tricky because, or it's not tricky, we have seen it in other fields too. For example, you can run only one printer server in your system, because if you run two, and two of them will write to the serial port, you will get a total confusion. For again, it's the kind of issue that is also apparent outside accessibility, because it started is people complaining that some application cannot open the WSD device and so on because of the application side. But in accessibility, we have also other requirements, and these requirements are not just for handicapped people, like I've talked before about accessibility. And so, for example, there is a need to have the messages from to have the sound somehow coordinated, as we have messages coordinated in speech dispatcher, or as UT4 coordinates our applications read to the screen, because you definitely sometimes don't want to not understand an important message by the speech synthesis just because you like playing loud your music and you have just set the music volume to a lot and the speech synthesis remained the same volume. So you get the message, whichever, but you don't hear the message because mixing works great. But these two applications are not aware of each other. And so there is no place where that could know that these two talk to the sound card and that it's necessary to make the volume of Amplayer, for example, lower to be able for the user to hear the important speech synthesis message. There needs to be coordination, so on. And this leads us to the need of some place in the system where all the sounds go, and this place is configurable, and you can send it commands to make different things with the different streams, and so on. Of course, this, what I'm talking about now, is a long-term vision. It's not something we'll find among the distant solutions or something that we will have tomorrow. I think this audio and multimedia thing is very important, and we still need to work on this. So I think, are there any questions, especially to this audio framework issue? And what would be our strategy to focus on this one?
Just a quick summary again. There are some tough problems to solve with regard to audio. At the same time, we've already achieved a lot. We're in a very good position through 8 SPI support, maybe we're possible with Q4. It will require a lot of work to get that work. I don't know, Mara, did you do any tests on any of the KDE widgets for actually be able to directly profit from them on it? How much work it would be to deploy all KDE libs?
Most of the easy ones work, the context container widgets at the moment they don't. So tables and tree views and so on don't have line edits and so on, they should pretty much work.
Okay, so a lot of widgets already work together with this Q accessible support in Q4, but you know some of the more complicated ones do. It will not be difficult, you know, once we've solved that in KDE libs, it will not be that difficult to make KDE 4 applications accessible. As long as people remember the 5 rules of thumb: colors, keyboard sizes, timeouts. we will need to somehow get this message through to the developers who are not here at the moment. So if there are any suggestions on a strategy to actually motivate them to look into this, I'll be very happy with it.
Well, I would suggest working with the usability people and the open usability website, perhaps. We're also working on the human interface guidelines, maybe. Perhaps this information in that location would be good.
Gary mentions the KDE usability project and the human interface guidelines they're currently writing. And that's indeed one of the areas I've discussed during the last days. And I've started the first draft for the KDE accessibility guide, which will pair with the usability guide, both as part of the human interface guidelines. And I'm giving this talk, I already thought that I would ask them
I don't know how applicable this is worldwide, but there are some very large agencies in the U.S. The U.S. government has stringent accessibility requirements, or else they won't even consider using it. And so if anyone is interested in their software being adopted by such agencies, they have to fulfill those requirements.
Yeah, the point was mentioned that accessibility is a pretty tough hard requirement for selling software to U.S. Government agencies.
Yeah, federal governments that way.
And it's actually also true for federal governments, and there are similar laws already in Europe, also in the member states of the European Union. So this is of course an important part of our invitation, which is raise a lot of noise saying, hey, it's a danger for us if we don't look into this.
Another side of it is if you are meet the accessibility requirements, that's a very positive thing about KDE that makes it attractive.
Yes, of course. There is I'm just repeating for the recording. It's also a very positive point if you have an accessible software. This is a very strong selling point, and I especially believe that with open source software, this can be accessibility can be very, very strong if we get people to cooperate behind the common goal, because the needs of people are very, very different. And if you only have proprietary solutions for accessibility, then people cannot customize them to their own needs. But with free software, you could have all kinds of service companies just implementing the stuff needed for a particular person. So the health insurance companies would pay the same amount of money, but instead of instead of the money just going to the license fee for a closed source product, the money could instead be spent on working out the perfect solution for an individual person.
I suggest you, I've written in the mailing list something about giving each academy a prize to the best development or the best application. You should put in there the best accessibility application or the best something like to just to keep the attention on the developers, every single academy about the work on that accessibility. You're gonna give something like a prize or something of an academy, okay? You get some accessibility prize there to the guy that have done something for this time. The other thing you already know, but I want to tell everybody, there is this association in Spain, it's a foundation. It's called ONCE, which is one of the most powerful organizations in Spain, it's a blind people organization. They spend humongous amounts of money in projects for blind people. They are all blind, or most, 80% of the people that works there are blind people. They got money all over Spain, all kind of projects. And they spend big amounts of money in licensing. They have already worked with Genomi. I don't remember exactly which project they got, but they have put on. And I think it's a great place to begin some cooperation and to have funds to improve the product. But the whole point is that we need some reports from the KD team to show them and of course give them a demo. And I mean, every year they have an event for new technologies for blind people, mechanical new technologies or electronic new technologies, but also software new technologies. It's gonna be this year in November, so it would be a nice opportunity to go there and try to make a conference there so everybody knows the project, because they already know what Genomi are doing, so they should know also what KD is.
So I'm again summarizing for the recording. Well, I have two ideas. One would be to give a prize as the best accessibility support and application at Academy Albania. And the second people is to approach the Spanish Organization for the Blind also, who are already funding some open source development. It's definitely something we should both look into.
When can I start using the Qt accessible interfaces, the Qt accessibility plugin, and ATSBI without installing Corbin? When do you think I can begin?
Okay, the question was when will it be possible to use the ATSBI infrastructure without Corbin or to Fibus instead? So how it can
put a last touch on my Fibus bindings, and I hope that at the end of the academy I will have the basic prototypes with the bridges out, which will not bridge all interfaces, but at least some interfaces, the basic interfaces, and the rest is just work to add the interfaces.
Last thing?
So Harald said that he's working on it right now, and he hopes to be through with most of
I don't know if anything like this exists, but one of the examples, some activity of my father's involved in was his organization in the U.S. Trying to provide accessibility support for people who didn't have good control over their movements. And so what he ended up doing was rigging up some devices, and I can't remember. I think it was Windows he was using, I'm not sure. But it was a charitable organization he was volunteering for. And he rigged up some external devices to try to help them control the computer with very, very simple things. And I see with open source, because of the fact that you can work on it from one end to the other, all the way from making your own hardware to changing the software as you need to work with it, you can do a lot more with that. And I don't know if there are any organizations that have looked at creating sort of an open hardware and software combination to help develop these sorts of tools. It's even in the form of a how-to that's part. Here's the support and the software, and here's things you can do to rig up some hardware to work it.
Okay, so the suggestion was to try to find people who sell hardware to merchant card people, and you know, to see whether they would actually look into making it also, you know, coupling that with, you know, open source software. And the question is, you know, whether there are any organizations doing that. I'm not aware of any resellers actually doing that. It's currently we have the situation where we have a number of programs for this on Linux. Some of them are better than the Windows counterparts. But the problem is that generally all the companies that are inter-accessible are very reluctant to work with open source. It might be because, you know, there are if you are selling stuff, you need you need to have it reviewed, etc. So they think that it's not worth spending so much money if, you know, everyone else can download the software for free and they don't know whether it's a worthy return of investment. It might be that perhaps they're just, you know, scared that open source will, you know, invalidate their or be a too high competition to their already existing competitor solutions. It might be that they're just aware of things. It might be that we just don't have the things they look into. I don't know.
To a little clarification, in this case I was talking about my father's electronic engineer. So he just volunteered his time,
yeah,
to name the devices and gave them to this these organizations. Because there's a lot of different adaptations that need to happen for different sorts of needs. It seems like it's a perfect candidate for sort of volunteer organizations to try to develop this sort of thing, create maybe the schematics and so on, and put them up for people to use so they can make their own. A lot of them are actually quite simple devices.
So Jeffrey, when I was mentioning that his father, as an engineer, was able to just, you know, write some simple devices himself and contacted some organizations to try it out.
Yeah, he was working at the organization, made what they needed.
And, you know, checked what they needed, etc. I tried to contact some German organizations for motion impaired people because my mother needed these things. And so, especially, you know, contacted an organization dealing with multiple sclerosis and ALS and stuff like that. But they weren't really interested. I also, you know, did get contact with a German Association for the Blind. Last year to the KDE conference, and it didn't turn out.
Yeah. My experience with the proprietary technologies in for blind people and with the big organizations in Czech Republic is that proprietary technologies for the disabled people are actually quite a good business, because the money, everything costs a lot of money, and the money is actually paid by the government. For many people, they don't get the money, but some people get money, and it's a lot, and it all goes to the vendors of the proprietary solutions and to the organizations to provide these solutions. So that's maybe a big reason why these organizations and the proprietary accessibility technology developing organizations don't want to step too much into this cooperative accessibility and open accessibility. And I think it's quite sad that the government doesn't see this and nothing is done in this regard.
One possibility I could suggest to your father, if he's inclined to, is maybe he can submit an article on his device to you, O'Reilly Make. That's like, which website? O'Reilly Make. It's an open source hardware hacker sort of website. It comes articles there all the time and hardware modifications.
Oh. It's from a Riley Publishing company?
Yeah. It's going to be RileyNet.com.
Make MAT effective?
Gary was suggesting using technical newspapers to inform people of this stuff.
Do you have internet there? Right now?
The question was whether we have internet here. No, I don't
know. No? Okay, it would be nice to meet, to get in ONCE, ONCE.es. ONCE.es.
Okay, so
that is probably the most important web page in Europe that related with blanking.
Okay, so it was
ONCE.es.
ONCE.
Okay, so it's not like once. Okay, so. Yeah.
It's in Spanish.
So
no, it's multi-language. You'll get it in many languages.
So this website, which I can't open here just now, is the website of the Spanish Organization for Blind, ONCE.es.
You can visualize it with Conquer, which is a great deal in this kind of problem we are talking here about.
So it works with Conqueror and Flutter. Okay, I see we've already run out of time. So thanks for all the feedback. And we'll have the next talk just now.
I think the next talk is not going to be now, but there is 30 minutes today.
Oh, yes, that's fine.
Yeah, I know. different from what he was talking about, is very different. So obviously he just didn't have spare time. But I can forward it to him.
That's the projector.
Yes, yes.
Thank you. power.
Cože?
Ne, na pole prostě. Mě tam zajímavá přednáška, jako tam nebude jako by nebyl. No?
Conquer your desktop. Conquer your desktop. Conquer your desktop. Conquer is your file manager, web browser, and universe.
Can you see this text okay?
No.
Did you ever look at the you know, I said, most of the slides with a description of them? Did you ever look at that? I posted them on a website and I had a link with a description of
yes,
the slide.
Yes. It was interesting.
Did it work for you?
I'm not sure.
Right?
But it was interesting. Yes.
I had no skill in doing that sort of thing.
Yes. It's it was a good job.
Aquí, luego aquí, esperas, te llegas a...